Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in to this episode of All Things Maryland. My name is Scott Fortner, Marilyn Monroe historian, collector, and owner of the Marilyn Monroe Collection.
And I am Elisa Jordan. I am the founder of LA Woman Tours. I'm an author, and I am also a Marilyn Monroe historian.
Let's dive into season two, episode three. And our topic today is probably one of the most discussed and misreported events in the history of Marilyn Monroe, and that is the JFK birthday gala.
Yeah, and I'll even expand on that by saying American history, because this evening has gone down to become an important evening in American history for a few reasons.
Definitely. I always like to say that no other time in American history have politics and Hollywood collided with such a bang. It really was an incredible night. But the topic for our episode today is President Kennedy's birthday gala, fact versus fiction.
Right.
And we are going to break apart all of these rumors, all of these stories. There are so many different things that people talk about and they just believe as being true.
Yeah.
Before we dive into fact versus fiction, Elisa, why don't we hear what Marilyn herself had to say about that night?
I was honored when they asked me to appear at Madison Square Garden. It was like a hush, you know, in the whole place. Which, you know, I thought, oh my God! You know, if I'd been wearing a slip, I would have thought it was showing or something. There was kind of this hushed quiet thing. I thought, oh my God, what if no sound comes out? And then you'll think, my God, I'll sing this song. If it's the last thing I'll ever do, you know? Afterwards, they had some kind of a reception because I never did see the food. But maybe that was in another part of the place. And I had met the attorney general briefly. So it was good to see a smiling, friendly face.
Marilyn's own words about being invited to and performing at President Kennedy's birthday gala, May 19th, 1962. It's fascinating. And that is from an interview that was conducted by Richard Merriman for Life magazine. And that was the last interview that was publicized basically right at the time Marilyn died. Incredible that that audio still exists. What'd you think of that, Elisa?
I love listening to Marilyn talk about her experiences because she is so open and honest. She's always very warm and forthcoming when she speaks. So it's fun to hear her insight and her perspective on things.
I think it's so incredible to think that she never saw the food at the after party.
Well, to be fair, would she have eaten it anyway? Because that dress was pretty tight.
It was, but I don't know. Maybe she was just letting her hair down, you know, because she was done and it went great. And here we are today, how many decades later, talking about this really incredible night.
No one could have guessed that we would be talking about this so many years later. There are political fundraisers all the time.
Yeah, I can't name another one. Yeah, I can't name another one.
This is the one people talk about. And it's because she was there.
Right. It's only because she was there. If she hadn't been there, I doubt anybody would even remember. Okay. Mm-hmm. Fact versus fiction. Let's dive in.
Let's do this.
If I am a star, the people may be a star.
Marilyn.
Marilyn Monroe.
Life is fate here and now. Fame is fickle.
Marilyn.
Marilyn Monroe.
I give you the two most exciting words in the modern dictionary. Marilyn Monroe!
Over the years, as part of the research that we've done, we've really come to discover what is true and what is not true. What's factual, what isn't factual. Unfortunately, a lot of the stuff that's reported about that night actually is not true. For this episode, we're going to put the facts out there and hopefully put all of the rumors and mistruths to rest. So let's dive in. Elisa, what was this birthday gala for? Was it just to celebrate Kennedy's birthday?
No, it wasn't. It was a Democratic fundraiser, and it took place at Madison Square Garden. as is typical for a lot of political fundraisers, you put together an event and you charge a lot of money for a ticket because the idea is you're raising money for something. So this was for the Democratic Party. They put together an evening at Madison Square Garden with a lot of big name celebrities. People paid for the privilege of seeing these celebrities, but they were also contributing to the Democratic Party. So if you were a Republican, you might not want to buy a ticket because you would be supporting the Democratic Party. Marilyn was not the headliner, although I would say in some ways she was, but we have a list of the people who performed, and it is pretty incredible. We have Peggy Lee, comedian Jack Benny, Ella Fitzgerald, who, of course, Marilyn was a big fan of, Mike Nichols, Elaine May, Harry Belafonte, Jerome Robbins, Henry Fonda, Elliot Reed, Diane Carroll, comedian Jimmy Durante, Eddie Jackson, Robert Merrill, Hal Hastings, he was the orchestra conductor, Danny Kaye, although he ended up canceling because of illness, Shirley MacLaine, Bobby Darin, the great Maria Callas, the opera singer, and Miriam Makeba. So that is quite a list. You got bang for your buck when you purchased a ticket for this.
And Shirley MacLaine is still alive. So someone who performed at that event is still alive today and can look back. I find it really interesting that Marilyn was not the headliner, but yet she was on the marquee outside the building.
It is interesting because she technically wasn't the headliner, and yet whose name do they tout?
It was Marilyn's.
Yeah, right. She wasn't technically the headliner, but she sure
was the draw.
Was.
yeah. So the marquee read, "Best thing today is here." And it was spelled H-E-A-R. "Best thing today is here, John F. Kennedy." "Second best thing is here," spelled H-E-R-E, Marilyn Monroe. Kind of interesting to know that she wasn't really touted as the headliner, but yet she was on the marquee, so people knew she was going to be there. And of course, this was a televised event across the entire country. People saw this.
It just goes to show the power of Marilyn and how popular she really was, even in 1962, because I know some people like to say her last couple of movies hadn't done very well and she was concerned. And there is truth to that. Her last couple of movies hadn't done very well, but the public still loved Marilyn.
Even though her name was on the marquee, she had to buy a ticket. And she didn't buy just one ticket, she bought five.
At $1,000 a piece.
$1,000 a piece. So that was an enormous sum of money. Who did she take with her?
She brought as her plus one Isidore Miller, who was her former father-in-law. It's interesting that we're covering this now because we've been talking a lot about Marilyn's biological father, Stan Gifford, and we just interviewed his granddaughter, Francine. But she did not have a relationship with Stan Gifford. She still maintained a relationship with her former father-in-law, Isidore Miller, and she called him Dad.
Yeah.
And she would still write letters to him, "Dear Dad," even though she and Arthur were divorced. And Isidore Miller considered her one of his own. He would write back to her, "Dear Marilyn," and then he would sign it, "Love, Dad." And when she passed away just a couple months later, he was quoted in a newspaper as saying he felt like he had lost one of his own children. I love that she brought him to this event. Mrs. Miller had passed away recently. They had been married a very long time. So to cheer him up at her own expense, she flew Isidore to New York and brought him along for this very special evening. So that was one of the tickets. Another one of the tickets was Pat Newcomb, who was her press agent and close friend. Mm-hmm. And then there is a letter that indicates she bought tickets for Arthur Miller's aunt.
And uncle, I'm assuming. When I was going through the files, which I've been doing for several years now for Julian's Auctions, all of Marilyn's personal archives, I found a letter that was dated May 29th, 1962, from a woman named Blanche Newbart, who is Arthur Miller's aunt. And in the letter, she says, "We want to thank you for the perfectly wonderful time we had at the president's birthday, and you made all this possible. It is something that we shall never forget, and we are thrilled that you thought of us. We loved your performance. It was delightful. And I'm sure the president never had anyone sweeter sing happy birthday to him. Your gown was magnificent. You looked like a dream walking." So for years, nobody knew who those other two tickets were for. So Marilyn bought her own ticket for $1,000. She bought a ticket for Isidore for $1,000. Pat Newcomb for $1,000. And then Mr. and Mrs. Newbart were guests as well. That was Marilyn's generosity.
It was. And it also shows where she was putting her money. She was supporting the Democratic fundraiser.
Good point.
So one of the things that I also wanted to talk about was the gown she wore to the gala. And this is one of the reasons the evening is so famous. It's reported that she was sewn into the dress. I was wondering if you could go into the history of the gown a little bit.
I know all about the history of this gown. It is probably one of the most famous garments in American history, just because it was what Marilyn wore when she sang Happy Birthday to the President that night. But of course, the gown itself has quite the history. Eunice Murray, in her book, Marilyn, the Last Months, actually writes about Marilyn and Marilyn acquiring the dress. And what she writes in her book is, "There was nothing impromptu about her performance. Marilyn had rehearsed for weeks and had ordered a dress, if one could call it that, made especially for the occasion. Marilyn never did anything halfway. Before the performance, Eunice did not see the dress that Marilyn had asked Jean-Louis to design. She saw the drawing of a dress sparkling with brilliance, but that was all. She saw the designer come to the house with only one fitter and watched them disappear with Marilyn into her dressing room. But then the door was closed and complete secrecy prevailed during the hours of fittings. Eunice knew when she saw the dress on television why she had not been permitted to see it. The dress was too skin tight, too extreme. It might have been more graceful if it were looser, Eunice felt. Marilyn had obviously sensed that she would not approve. Marilyn could not resist telling another friend or two about the dress for the president's party. One woman to whom she showed the material, a silk souffle, said later, "I put my hand under it and I could see right through it. It was the sheerest flesh-colored net. And I'm not going to wear anything underneath," Marilyn had said with great glee in her eyes. "Just me." If it hadn't been for the bright lights in Madison Square Garden, the Democratic Party assemblage would have seen a lot more than was meant to be seen. But the hundreds of strategically placed brilliance shimmered and glimmered so brightly that the body beneath was clothed in reflected light. The tight fit and nudity were not as important to Marilyn as the fact she glittered all over as if rhinestones had been pasted over her body. She just glowed. That was the effect that mattered. So that was a little bit of the story about Marilyn using Jean-Louis to prepare and design the dress for her. And of course, Jean-Louis was an Oscar-winning costume designer, and he did costumes for the Misfits and also Something's Got to Give. Interestingly, though, the gown was sketched by Bob Mackie, who in his own right is a very, very famous costume designer today. He's done Cher, he's done Elton John, he's done the Carol Burnett Show, he's done Britney Spears, Tina Turner. The list just goes on. You've got to get his book if you don't have his book. It's quite incredible. Interestingly, though, the style of the gown, the souffle, the nude material with the rhinestones, isn't something that was unique to Marilyn, because Jean-Louis had created similar gowns for Marlene Dietrich to wear in her supper club act. Mm-hmm. What was different, though, is Marilyn's showed a lot more skin and a lot more flesh.
Marlene Dietrich's dress gave a similar illusion, but it was long-sleeved and it went up to her neck, whereas Marilyn's was different because she had a scoop neck and it was sleeveless and it was practically backless.
It was.
So in that regard, it was very different than Marlena's.
Very different. And the thing is, that dress was specifically custom designed for Marilyn. And back to your question, it had a zipper. And so I don't know why anybody would need to be sewn into a garment that was custom made for them and it had a zipper. I think that's just another one of those tales that has been widely communicated as part of Marilyn performing at the gala that night. But I really don't think that she was sewn into it. I really don't think it makes sense for anyone to be sewn into a gown that was custom made for them.
I don't think so either, because that dress is so exacting and Jean-Louis was not present when she put it on the evening of the gala. I don't think he would have left that to chance.
Exactly. It fit her perfectly. It fit her like a glove. I'm going to share some information that is not widely known and is not public, and it's the actual cost of the gown. Christie's in the 1999 auction inaccurately reported that Marilyn had paid $12,000 for the gown back in 1962. That was an enormous sum of money. Mm-hmm. But there are receipts that show exactly how much Marilyn paid. And then I purchased Marilyn's financial accounting documents for all of 1962, January through August of 1962. And it has in those accounting documents everything that she spent money on. Everything. So we have the total price of the gown plus the cost of applying all of the rhinestones. The gown itself, the labor and material was $1,027.36. The cost of the rhinestones, which were separate from the actual gown, were $321.89. She bought a pair of Ferragamo shoes for $35.68 that she had dyed to exactly match the color of the gown. Tax was $55.40. And so all of the materials and the labor to construct the gown were $1,440.33. Now, the cost of the beads being applied to the gown, that was $988.50. So the total price that Marilyn paid for the gown in 1962 was $2,428.83. That includes everything, the shoes, the gown, the construction, and having the beads and the crystals applied. Incredibly, with inflation, the cost of the gown today would be $24,459. So that's pretty astonishing.
And isn't it interesting that the cost of the beads being applied is almost as much as the material and labor costs?
Yeah, it really is incredible. But it took over 2 weeks to apply all of those crystals to the gown. And Eunice writes in her book that the seamstress that was working on applying the crystals actually had to relocate quite a few of them because it was too bulky around the waist. And so she had to go through and remove those and apply them elsewhere. So the fabric that the gown was made of, again, was a fabric called soufflé. It's a French material. It's no longer available, and it's actually quite flammable. And that's probably the reason why it's no longer available. It catches fire really easily. So that's a little bit scary. This dress is the most expensive dress ever sold at auction. It sold at Julian's in 2016 for $4.8 million. And so that is the most ever paid for a personal garment. And it broke its own record. It sold in 1999 for $1.2 million. And at that point, it was also the most expensive personal garment ever sold. Prior to that, it was Princess Diana's velvet blue dress that she wore to a White House dinner. It's the same dress she was wearing when she danced with John Travolta. That had been the most expensive dress ever sold up to that point.
And by the way, Scott is pronouncing that correctly. It's not souffle, it is souffle. I'm just addressing that because I know someone is thinking that right now.
Yeah.
You also bring up something that's really interesting. When it broke its own record in 2016, you and I were there.
We were there. I was right behind the man who bought it, and you were seated right next to him. He was a representative for Ripley's.
And it was so funny because when it went up for auction, people started bidding and it started to get serious. And the man next to me started bidding on it. And I thought, my goodness, what is happening? And he ended up winning. They asked if he would be willing to speak to the press. And when he stood up and started talking to the press, I was sitting right next to him, looking up at him. And you can see both you and me in those photos for the press.
Yeah. I remember being so excited because Ripley's had purchased the gown. And I was just really worried that it was going to be purchased by someone and just go into a private collection, as it had been since 1999. A private collector bought it at the Christie's auction. The gown hadn't been seen in decades, unless you got a personal invitation. I understand that it was in his penthouse in New York on display in his living room. But it was exciting to know that a company had purchased it and it would be on display. Then, of course, we have what happened with them loaning the dress to Kim Kardashian for the Met Gala. That's a whole other episode
talk about.
So much for that. It was worn to the Met Gala last year and basically destroyed by Kim Kardashian.
But it's funny, going back to the zipper question, it has largely and frequently been reported that she was sewn into that dress. Mm-hmm. If you look at the dress, and you and I have seen it many times, you can see the zipper. It's at the small of Marilyn's back, and it's an invisible zipper. It's a see-through clear zipper. Mm-hmm. And then there's hooks and eyes to cover it so that you can't see it, but it is there and it's quite visible. I was fortunate enough, after Ripley's set up a display for their Hollywood location right on Hollywood Boulevard, I got an invitation to see their grand reveal or their big reveal. So I was there that night and they had an employee giving a speech and talking about how she had to be sewn into the dress. And I'm looking at the dress and there's a zipper in it.
No.
So yeah. I go up to him and I wasn't trying to be a jerk. I thought he might like to know. And I pulled him aside privately and just said, I thought you might like to know there is a zipper, because I figured he would want to be giving out the real information. And he argued with me and he said, no, there's no zipper in it. She was sewn into it. And I said, no, there's a zipper in it. And he looked at me and he said, I'll fight you. And he gestured for me to go over and look at it. And I pointed to the zipper.
Wow.
Don't know.
Yeah. Like I said, that's the whole point of this episode of All Things Marilyn, is to really just dispel a lot of these rumors. There's a zipper, people. There's a zipper. Yeah. You can see it. Here's an interesting question. Was Jackie Kennedy at the JFK gala?
She was not. And this is something else that bothers me a lot.
It's because Marilyn was there, right?
Because JFK and Marilyn were having a big affair and flaunting it in front of the whole world.
That's why she wasn't there. I knew
it. Yeah. When Anthony Summers came out with his BBC documentary, that was a big part of it. He mentioned Jackie Kennedy was not present at Madison Square Garden. And he didn't come out and say why, if I'm remembering correctly. He just let it hang there and let you feel smart enough to realize, oh, she wasn't there because Marilyn was there. Mm-hmm. But this was in character for Jackie Kennedy. She was not one to attend fundraisers. She did a lot of campaigning on his behalf. She was a very good political wife, but she didn't really attend fundraisers. And this was not a birthday party. It was a fundraiser. They did celebrate his birthday at the fundraiser. Jackie Kennedy didn't go because she didn't really go to fundraisers. She was in Virginia that weekend at an equestrian event because she was a great equestrian.
She was at a horse show. Interesting, though. That night wasn't even his birthday. His birthday was not May 19th. It was May 29th. Interesting that it is his birthday gala. They have a huge cake that comes out. Marilyn sings happy birthday to him, and it's not even his birthday. It was days later.
We know Marilyn paid $1,000 for her tickets. I don't know if the people in the nosebleed seats paid less or if there were people who paid more than $1,000, but at least 15,000 paying guests were participating in the fundraiser.
Yeah. Well, about the tickets, as we already discussed, Marilyn paid $1,000. That must have been a VIP ticket. At auction at Julian's in 2020, the collection of Frida Hull, who was a member of the Monroe Six, that would be another great episode for us. Mm-hmm. Her program for the JFK gala and also her ticket went up for auction. It sold for $6,400, but her ticket indicated that it was a cost of $10 to get in to the event that night. So those must have been the general admission tickets.
Yeah, Frida was a fan of Marilyn's.
Indeed.
For those of you who don't know who the Monroe Six were.
Six people who followed Marilyn around, took her pictures, got to know her, and she got to know them and knew them by name. Mm-hmm. Another episode for the All Things Marilyn podcast.
Another rumor, Scott, is that Marilyn gave JFK a Rolex watch as a present. I assume that would be for his birthday because, you know, it was his birthday party. And you were the one who told me about this rumor. I actually had not heard it until you told me about it. So I was wondering if you could go over that. Is it true? Are there photos of the Rolex? Is there evidence that she gave the Rolex to him? Because the first thing I said when you told me this story was, well, then there would be a Rolex floating around if that were true. So I thought maybe you could go into that.
And it's been rumored for years that Marilyn gifted President Kennedy a Rolex that night. And there are pictures of Marilyn, several pictures of Marilyn holding something in one of her hands. And nobody really has been 100% sure what that was. Here's the deal. Rolexes, as most people know, are very high-end Swiss-made watches, and they're all handmade. And each one of them comes with a unique identifying number. There was a Rolex floating around. About this particular watch, it sold at auction in 2005. October 18th for $120,000. And this particular watch was engraved. On the back, Jack, with love as always, from Marilyn, May 29th, 1962. Of course, the date, May 29th, is JFK's birthday. The night of the JFK gala was May 19th. It also included a poem, and the poem reads, "A heartfelt plea on your birthday. Let lovers breathe their sighs and roses bloom and music sound. Let passion burn on the lips and eyes and pleasures. Merry world go round. Let golden sunshine flood the sky and let me love or let me die." So this is the watch that people say Marilyn gave to President Kennedy. Every single Rolex that's made has a unique identifying number. And of all of the lists that have been checked, the Rolex serial number is 1296419. And it was made in the third quarter of 1965, 2 years after President Kennedy was assassinated. So there's no way that Marilyn could have given President Kennedy this watch. It's just not true. It's been proven just from the watch's own unique ID that it couldn't possibly have been given by Marilyn to the president because it was made after both of them had passed away. This particular watch sold at auction in 2005 for $120,000.
So this is one of the things that bothers me about this story is it was sold at auction. Why didn't the auction company check that number?
Very good question. It's common that Rolexes have unique identifying numbers. So somebody should have checked it. And 2005, that's almost 20 years ago. It's not recently discovered that Rolexes have unique identifiers. So somebody really should have checked it.
Yeah, because Marilyn's Thunderbird was auctioned off a few years ago. And as we know, all cars have a unique VIN number. So what did Julian's do? They checked the VIN number.
Right. They tracked it down. So back to the issue of what Marilyn had in her hand. As I mentioned, there are several photos of Marilyn that night at the gala with something in her hand. And if we go back to Eunice Murray's book, she writes about how everyone was encouraging Marilyn and really trying to help her because Marilyn was a bit nervous about this. It was a very big performance. And from the book, everyone she knew encouraged her. As a kind of joke, Joni Greenson gave her a book to read on the plane, The Little Engine That Could, a childhood story of positive thinking. I think I can, I think I can, I think I can. The little engine kept telling itself as it chugged to the top of the hill. That's a true story. That book sold at auction at Christie's in 1999 for $16,100. And it was listed in the catalog as having scribbles inside, and they said possibly in Marilyn's own handwriting. But the truth is that book was given to Marilyn by Joan Greenson, who was the daughter of Ralph Greenson, who was Marilyn's psychiatrist. That's the history of that book. But what was it in her hand? This is what it was from Eunice Murray's book. Marilyn also took a handsome chess piece from the set she had bought in Mexico to wrap in her handkerchief while she sang. A friend had suggested she take it and pretend he was right there with her to lend her courage. Marilyn took the chessman with her, but lost it somewhere in New York. Eunice had another one on order from Mexico when Marilyn died. A bad omen, perhaps losing one's symbol for courage. And that is actually a true story. I mentioned earlier that I had Marilyn's financial records that I had purchased at auction in 2016. In June, the financial documents for June, it's listed Tolaris Borda, purchase silver chess pawn for $80. So they spent $80 on a chess pawn, and the date of that expense is June 5th, 1962. So the item that Marilyn is carrying in her hand, as seen in the photos, is her silver chess pawn, which she took for good luck and for self-confidence and to give her strength.
She was very nervous. I remember seeing Joan Greenson interviewed in the 1980s, and she told the Little Engine That Could story. I was ecstatic when I saw that the book had been found in her belongings and was going to be auctioned. And then I thought it was silly that they assumed the scribbles in the book were from Marilyn. It was Joan Greenson, and I saw her interviewed again after her book had been discovered in Marilyn's things, and it had been her childhood book. So she had scribbled in it when she was a little girl when she lent it to Marilyn. And obviously Marilyn didn't have the opportunity to return the book because she died not long after that. Yeah, I remember thinking that is so cool that the book was found in Marilyn's things.
Yep. Yep. And now we know it was Joan Greenson's. I think that there were a lot of mistakes in that auction. People just didn't know. I mean, it was 1999. We didn't really have the internet the way that we have it today. people weren't really able to do research. They also didn't picture everything in the catalog. They just did lot descriptions. Only a percentage of the items were actually photographed in the catalog, mm-hmm. which today is not done. At auction, everything is pictured in the catalogs. Interesting to be able to report what that actually was in Marilyn's hand when she was at the gala. And I wonder if anybody ever found it.
I don't know. She was all over the place that evening. She was backstage. She was performing. She was with Isidore Miller. Then they went to an after party. But then she could have just lost it on the ride home, or she could have lost it after that. I completely respect the fact that she didn't want a missing chess piece because right. it would look weird.
And they replaced it, had another yeah. one on order. Yeah. So let's talk about the after party a little bit. Another rumor about this particular night is that Marilyn went home with President Kennedy after the gala.
No, Marilyn did not go home.
What happened after the gala?
A gentleman by the name of Walter Krim had an after party at his house. There were dozens of people there. Marilyn was there, and there's a really famous picture of Marilyn conversing with both Kennedy brothers. It's the only photo like that. And when you see it, it's usually cropped to have just Marilyn and the Kennedy brothers. And it looks like a very intimate conversation. It's very suggestive. But when you see the actual photo uncropped, there are several people around them. So it was just like chit-chatting at a party.
Right. The party was very well attended. There were tons of people in that same room. In mm-hmm. the full photo, you can see Isidore Miller in the background. And everybody's, oh, you know, the FBI, they came in and they destroyed all these photos that were taken. And that's the only photo of Marilyn and Kennedy known to exist. That's not true. There's other photos from that party where you can see Marilyn and the president in the same photo. There are several.
There are not only several photos online. You can go to the official President Kennedy Library website, and they have basically every day of his presidency documented. Mm. So you can see photos from that night, and there are dozens of photos. They documented the whole thing. They're available to the public. They are public domain, so you can download them if you want. And there are pictures from that party that night as part of the collection. And there's a picture of Diane Carroll singing for the guests, an impromptu concert, and Marilyn is sitting there watching with Isidore Miller. By all accounts, she pretty much never left Isidore Miller's side except to perform that night. Right. So when you see pictures of her from that night, Isidore Miller is within a few feet of her. She did not let her father-in-law out of her sight, which is something you would expect. She was looking out for him.
Let's talk about the relationship between Marilyn and the president. It's rumored again that she went home with him that night, that JFK and Marilyn went home together, which is absolutely ridiculous. There was an after party. Her date was Isidore Miller, and she right. didn't abandon him. They were together from beginning to end.
So there is something I want to talk about because it bothers me very much. And I know that you have pictures to help clear this up on your website, so I thought you could talk about it. There are persistent rumors that Marilyn was drunk during her performance. Now, we know she was nervous, but we also know how she was coping with that. She had some pretty good coping mechanisms. She used the Little Engine That Could book, and she also had the chess piece. So I was hoping you could talk a little bit about the drunk rumors.
Yeah, that's another rumor that's just not true. The truth is, Marilyn performed the song exactly the way that she wanted to perform it. She wasn't drunk. She wasn't high. Another rumor is she got lost on her way to the stage and she was out of breath because she was running around backstage trying to find where to go on. Ridiculous. The truth is, she rehearsed the song that way. Another book that I wanted to read from is the Susan Strasberg book, Marilyn and Me, which is actually a very good book. And I would recommend this to any Marilyn fan, anybody interested in learning about their direct relationship. But what Susan wrote was about her mother just coming back from visiting Marilyn at Marilyn's apartment. She wrote, "Mother was a wreck when she got home from the rehearsal at Marilyn's apartment. It keeps getting sexier and sexier. If she doesn't stop, it will be a parody. Richard Adler was crazed. He made Peter Lawford call the president, who just laughed and said, 'Great. What did you say?' I asked. 'Mom, why didn't you tell her the truth? She looked chastised. She didn't want to hear it. She's determined to do it sexy. How else can I top everybody else? Marilyn said. There's nothing anyone can tell her about this except maybe your father, but he won't because it's not important enough to him. They'll probably blame me. Maybe they'll love it. It goes on to say that Marilyn had worn out three pianists rehearsing for this song. She'd sung it in the bathtub, on the plane, night and day. So the truth is, Marilyn rehearsed it. Not only do we know that she rehearsed it because people listened to her rehearse it, there actually was a rehearsal at Madison Square Garden before the actual event. There are photographs of Marilyn rehearsing the song, and she's doing the exact same hand movements and body gestures that she did when she actually performed the song. I've done comparisons where you can see. So she performed the song exactly the way that she wanted to, and she rehearsed it. And one of the things I just love is the fact that I own the green Pucci blouse that she was wearing when she was on stage while she was rehearsing for her performance of Happy Birthday, Mr. President for President Kennedy. And I've never been able to nail down the date of the rehearsal. I don't know if it's the day before or the day of, but it just blows my mind that she could have taken that blouse off and the next thing that she put on was the Happy Birthday, Mr. President dress to head to the gala. Fascinating, fascinating. Mm-hmm. But the truth is, that's exactly the way that she wanted to perform it. She wanted to perform it the only way that Marilyn Monroe would perform it.
See, and I have a theory, and I know you and I see things a little differently. I think she was adding a little bit of Marlena Dietrich in there. Her dress was inspired by at least a little bit Marlena Dietrich's nightclub act. And Marlena Dietrich was known for having these sexy performances with a deep, husky voice. And I can't help but wonder if she was doing a little bit of Marlena that night. That might not be true, but I think it's quite possible, because if you watch the performance, she does a very dramatic pause here and there, and she has a deeper than her normal singing voice. And the audience would have been familiar with Marlena's cabaret act. It was very popular. And you can hear the audience laughing. So I wonder, and this is me talking, I'm not saying this is fact, I'm wondering if she meant it to be a comedic, sexy performance. Just a thought that I'm throwing out there.
Comedic in that dress?
It could be. If she's doing an impersonation of Marlena Dietrich, she loved Marlena Dietrich, and Marlena Dietrich loved her. It's not out of the realm of possibility. Again, I'm not saying this is fact. I am.
You're just wondering.
Yeah, I'm just wondering. I think it's a possibility, because it would be very ironic to come out and sing this sweet, innocent song that we all know. We sing it at children's birthday parties, and then to come out and sing this very sexy rendition of it. Marilyn did have a pretty wicked sense of humor. She was very funny in real life and very witty. So I'm wondering if she thought it would be funny to sing this happy, innocent little song in a very sexy way. And then she breaks into Thanks for the Memories with modified lyrics. And she goes into her regular singing voice that sounds much more like her.
Yeah.
And she's much more bubbly in that. So
she picks up the pace a little bit there.
Yeah. That's just my take. And again, I'm not stating this as fact. It's just something to look at.
Let's leave it up to our listeners to decide. Mm-hmm. Feel free to comment in the comment section if you think it was a Marlena Dietrich spoof. Let's see what people say.
This is something else that was actually in the news last year. And I have to be honest here, I didn't think this would ever be a point of contention. But given the events of the Met Gala and Kim Kardashian, along with Ripley's Believe It or Not, there are rumors that Robert Champion cut and styled Marilyn's hair for the gala that night. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about who styled her hair.
Sure. It wasn't Robert Champion. And for years, people have had an opportunity to buy online and at auction Marilyn Monroe's hair cut from her head the night of the JFK gala by stylist Robert Champion. I have no idea who started this, but Robert Champion did not cut or style Marilyn's hair at the JFK gala. Was Robert Champion there? Yes, he was there. He did Maria Callas's hair, not Marilyn's. A receipt surfaced. Again, this is why it's so interesting, fascinating, and important to know and learn about Marilyn's personal files. A receipt surfaced that actually verifies it was Mr. Kenneth who did Marilyn's hair. This receipt is for services provided on May 18th and 19th, 1962. So it was Kenneth, and it's well documented that Kenneth had been doing Marilyn's hair for a while. There are photos of them together. Mm-hmm. Kenneth is listed in Marilyn Monroe's address books, both of them, which I own from 1962. Here's what's really interesting about this particular topic. When you look at Robert Champion's book that he wrote and read about the President Kennedy Gala, even Robert Champion doesn't say that he did Marilyn's hair that night. He never comes out and says it. So basically, somebody saw a picture of them together, cut a huge swatch of blonde hair, and has been selling that for quite some time, saying that it's Marilyn Monroe's hair and it was cut from her head the night of the JFK gala. And it wasn't. There's no evidence to prove or to verify or document that Robert Champion cut Marilyn's hair that night. And so this relates to the Kim Kardashian issue, because personnel and staff at Ripley's, as a gift to Kim, gave her a lock of Marilyn Monroe's hair that they say came from Robert Champion. So when I publicized that there was actually a receipt, that hair couldn't have been real because Robert Champion actually didn't cut her hair, it was Mr. Kenneth, they came back and said, oh, we didn't give her a lock of hair from Robert Champion. We own several locks of Marilyn's hair. We gave her a lock of hair from a different lock of hair that we have. Nonetheless, in Kim's dressing room, there was Marilyn memorabilia. The photo did show that hair from Robert Champion was actually in Kim Kardashian's dressing room as she prepared for the Met Gala. They've taken it down after I did my report on this, but I have that on my blog up on my website, themarilynmonroecollection.com. So the truth is, Robert Champion did not do Marilyn Monroe's hair for the JFK birthday gala. It was Mr. Kenneth who did her hair that night.
And he did one of those bouffants that were really popular at the time.
Yes. There are several stylists who said that they did Marilyn's hair that night. Mickey Song is another one who said, oh yeah, I'm the one who did Marilyn's hair for the JFK gala. It was Mr. Kenneth who did Marilyn's hair. It's really interesting how people try to attach themselves to Marilyn just to be part of that stardom.
Well, and you know, there was no way they could have known that 60 years later,
right,
we would be going through Marilyn's files and right, trying to match up these dates with certain people, and that Marilyn would have saved
everything,
receipt ever. If yeah, she hadn't done that, we might be saying, did Mr. Kenneth do her hair? Did
maybe
Robert Champion do her hair?
Yeah, Robert Champion was there. There's photos of them together. He yeah, was there.
We don't have to guess. We know.
Yeah. But I think what's really telling, obviously, number one, the receipt, and number two, even Champion doesn't say that he did Marilyn's hair that night. He says that he touched up Marilyn's makeup that night at the gala. I'm not even sure I buy that, though, because Marie Irvine was the person who did Marilyn's makeup that night. She's actually still alive, from what I understand. Erin Parsons and I have talked about this, and she says that she did Marilyn's makeup, and so she allegedly was there that night. I would think if she was there, why would somebody else be touching up her makeup? I don't know. That one I'm not really 100% sure about. But there is documented evidence in the form of a receipt from Marie Irvine that she did Marilyn's makeup for the JFK gala.
And you can tell that this was taking place on the East Coast, because had it been on the West Coast, it would have been Whitey Snyder, Marilyn's
exactly,
regular makeup man.
Exactly. Who did her makeup from beginning to end, literally. Mm-hmm. Lisa and I have spent several hours coming together to talk about what we might want to share for fact versus fiction specific to the JFK gala on May 19th, 1962. If you like this episode, if you like our podcast, please remember to rate us, give us 5 stars, leave reviews wherever you listen to podcasts. Lisa, any closing thoughts?
I guess my closing thoughts would be, if you are a fan of Marilyn or even just have a passing interest in her, please look at the facts and evidence. I realize I'm biased, and that's why we started this podcast, but there is so much good information out there that is real that you can look at, like her receipts, her interviews, and learn the truth. Scott and I had a great time putting this together because we like going through those things, and hopefully you enjoy that too, and that's why you're here. If there's anything you might want to know about this evening, or you have questions about particular topics, please drop us a line at allthingsmarilynpodcast@gmail.com, and we'll put it on a list of potential episodes.
Indeed. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in to this episode of All Things Maryland. You can follow us online at All Things Maryland Podcast on Instagram. And as Alisa mentioned, if you have any thoughts, comments, feedback, suggestions, or ideas for future episodes or questions about this episode, our email address is allthingsmarylandpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. We'll see you next time on All Things Maryland.
Good night, man.
Bye-bye.
You loved on the screen, and that's the one thing that survived, you know.
I realize more and more the responsibility, but you do miss sometimes just being able to be completely yourself and someplace, and people just know you as another human being.